This episode of the Android Central podcast is brought to you by Mint Sim, the best way to get cheap 4G LTE data in the US, now with even lower introductory prices. Use offer code ACFREESHIP for free first-class shipping on any Mint Sim purchase. Hey everybody, my name is Daniel Bader. This is the Android Central podcast for Thursday, August 3rd, 2017. And I'm joined by two lovely fellas. Welcome back to the podcast, finally, Russell Hawley. How are you,
man? Hey, I'm doing good.
Awesome. So glad to have you back. Have you been gallivanting the world? Did you go visit a far-off region of the globe? Or did you just chill?
Oh, no, I napped, like, a lot. There was a lot of napping.
Oh, that sounds so lovely. Man. Summer is the time for napping.
Yeah, a lot of really extensive napping, occasionally in hammocks, but not exclusively in hammocks. I'm not picky.
There is nothing better than a good hammock. It rivals a really good couch.
Oh, it's true.
Oh, Jerry?
Yes.
How are you?
I'm fine.
Have you been on
how
couches recently? Or just...
Dude. I live on a couch.
Yeah,
I am Mr. Couch.
Mr. Couch. Better than Mr. Coffee, but we'll talk about that a bit later. So welcome back, both of you. This is going to be a fun show. This morning, August 3rd, 9 a.m., the embargo lifted for the Moto Z2 Force. So we talked about it a little bit last week, but we can really dig into it in a bit of follow-up. And we'll also talk about the Galaxy Note 8. We have a bit more detail about that. It's launching August 23rd. And we saw a pretty nice leak of the LG V30 this morning, so we'll talk about that too. And we'll end the show with some AR-VR hype, because Russell's not just a pretty voice on your radio. He's actually here to talk about the Asus Zenfone AR. He was in a New York event earlier in the week, so we'll get the scoop on that. And then we'll do a Q&A question and answer, because why not? So we'll start with the Z2 Force. I have one, and Andrew has one. We talked about it a bit last week, but let's dig into a little bit more, because I've been using it. It's been in my pocket for about 9-10 days, and it's kind of a shrug phone. Jerry, what's the impression you've been getting from the rest of the internet on this device?
You know, I hate to say it, but nobody likes it.
Yeah,
and that's not fair.
I got that
Nobody's
feeling.
Touched it, but it's the move backwards in battery, which, I mean, I think you make it obvious that that's not as big a deal as people are worried about, but it's there's no real moving forward, and they've moved backwards in a few ways, and nobody seems to want to give it any, you know, any chance.
Yeah.
Can't blame them.
I mean, if it was 650, even
right.
If it was 650, it would have been a better deal. If it was 600, you know. But this is not much better than the Moto Z2 Play, which is $408 at Verizon and $500 unlocked. You can get a 64-gig version with 4 gigs of RAM. Russell, you know, you were kind of hot on Moto Mods in 2016. How are you feeling about them a year later?
I'm still a fan. You know, I don't use a Motorola phone every day, but when I do, I'm quick to grab either the battery mod or the speaker mod. I'm, you know, especially if I'm like outside on the grill or if I'm doing something like that. Like I still really dig having a speaker mod nearby. And anytime I leave the house for more than a couple hours, it's always nice to not have to, you know, bring a portable battery or make sure that my car has the right charger in it or something like that. My partner still uses a Moto Z Force and does not go anywhere without the battery mod. So, I mean, it's cool to see the advancement that was made in mods over this past year. You know, I don't know that I'd go so far as to pick up a gamepad mod, but I liked the way it looked.
Andrew loved it, and he's not here, but he definitely sends his love of that thing through the internet.
Okay, and I want to stop, but Russell, you'll totally get a gamepad mod. Quit. You know, no, you will.
So I don't think I've been burned so many times before by the whole, you know, you can use a gamepad to play Android games. No, you can't. Okay, you can use a gamepad to play like two Android games.
Touche.
And it's just not fun to play a lot of these games, you know. And if I'm gonna go that route, for me, I get that this is not an option for even most people, but I already own a Nintendo Switch, which is basically a Moto Z with a gamepad mod on it. So if I'm gonna, you know, sit and play games, I'm not gonna do it on my phone. I'm gonna go and grab that, or I'm gonna wait till I get home. But you know, it's a cool option for people who are completely mobile and they live on their phone and they have a couple of, you know, the two or three games that they really feel like would be better with a gamepad. Then it's an awesome option to have, you know, and it looks really nice. I gotta say, you know, as someone who has been, you know, part of the gamepad hype since like the Nokia N-Gage, you know, it does look really nice. But you know, the other mods that have been released, especially the backplates that give Qi charging, and we've gotten some better battery mods that have been available now, including battery mods that actually charge separately from the phone, which is a nice touch. You know, it's weird. I've heard a couple of times, you know, just kind of in passing, that Motorola released this phone to sell mods. And based on Daniel's review, I'm kind of leaning on that as what actually happened, you know?
Yeah, I got some pushback on my supposition, which is to say that's partially true. Obviously, the mod ecosystem is a big revenue driver, and it's certainly much higher in margin than a phone. So yes, Motorola is certainly pushing people, but I also think that by getting the phone down to a manageable size, so basically Motorola is stuck with this form factor. It's 5.5 inches. It's got to be within a few millimeters, within a few, you know, point millimeters. It has to be certain height, certain width, but they can play with the thickness. And as a result, the only way to make the phone more usable with one of these thicker mods is to make it thinner and to remove battery and to make it lighter. And by making it lighter, it considerably improves the experience. And I have to say that coming from a Moto Z Play to a Moto Z 2 Play and now to a Z 2 Force, I hate those names, it is very noticeable. Especially when you're using a mod. Like, this is 143 grams. The Moto Z Force, the original, was 163 grams. And that's 20 grams. And that's, you know, a significant amount to take away, especially when you have an add-on sitting on the back. So people are going to be cynical. That's fine. You can, you know, that's your prerogative. But I don't think this was merely a cash grab. I think this was a way to expand the Moto Z line in the only way possible for the greatest number of people. And this is somebody who wrote a review that basically trashes the phone. So it's not like I'm here defending Motorola.
Sure.
You know, I just think that, like, they're giving these mods away for free. It's not like they're flying off the shelves. So to really undercut the base like that, I just don't see that as being the purpose of this move.
I think it's important to point out, you know, a big complaint about the original Z Force and the Z. I didn't hear it as much with the Z2 Play, oddly enough. The biggest problem with using some of these mods, especially some of these battery mods, as convenient as they are compared to, you know, having to lug around a separate battery and a cable, is that you can't really put a case on the phone anymore. No one's going to make a case for, you know, the Z2 with this specific battery mod. Like, that's not going to be a thing that happens. And so the benefit of the Force line is not needing to worry about that, because you can drop the phone 100 times and watch as the two pieces split in half and skitter across the road and know that the phone is okay. That it's not really necessary to have a case. That's not nothing in a world where, you know, we have the most popular phone being sold with, you know, running Android, is got glass on both sides and is ridiculously fragile by comparison.
Except that it's waterproof, which is,
and that's true. That is
bizarre how fully, you know, yeah. Motorola forewent that on its most expensive phone. Jerry, I'm wondering, this is the first Motorola flagship to be sold at all four U.S. carriers in as far back as I can remember. How big of a deal is that?
It's a pretty big deal for Motorola. You know, it could be a good deal for consumers. There are still people who want to carry a contract with any of the big four carriers, and that works best for them. And if they're interested in this phone, they're the only people who are going to get it at a price that, you know, is not absolutely certifiably insane.
Yeah. I mean, this is a $720 phone minimum. Let's point that out. At AT&T, it's over $800, as AT&T is wont to do. And I just don't see it being $300 better than the Moto Z2 Play.
Really, though, we should all pour one out for the final and complete death of the Droid line.
Yeah.
Because that's what this phone being on all four carriers said to me, was that the deal with Verizon was finally done, like completely done. No more, you know, strings attached. And that meant that, you know, that the Droid brand in and of itself was also completely gone. That makes me happy.
I guess that's good. We also poured one out for the Moto 360 watch brand last week because Motorola has now used it to sell the new 360-degree camera, which I feel like you would be kind of interested in, Russell. This is a really nice product.
Yeah, I've been nervously sitting and trying really hard not to like come to your house.
To cross a border, which is increasingly difficult these days. But you're welcome
scared.
Anytime. It's also $300, which is about the same. It's the same price as, say, the Gear 360, but this only works with four phones. How big of a deal is that?
The Moto 360 camera needs an $810 battery from AT&T to make it work, and the Samsung camera doesn't.
Right.
So. Yeah, but I mean, the Samsung camera, you know, we say it only works with four phones, but really, the Gear 360 doesn't work with any other Android phones. It only works with Samsung phones, and it only works with Samsung phones that have the most recent access to the Samsung App Store.
They didn't get that squared away and make it work with...
It works with an iPhone just great.
Oh, my God.
But no.
What the hell is wrong with these companies?
I cannot pair it to my LG phone or my Asus phone. There is no Gear 360 app for anything but Samsung phones. So it's...
I quit.
There are slightly more phones that that the Gear 360 can connect to, but I don't know that it's as big a deal that the Moto 360 can only connect to these four Motorola phones.
You know, I didn't even look because I thought to myself, yeah, no company is that stupid that 2 years later they're not going to be able to say, oh, you can buy this camera and it works with just about any phone. No company's that stupid. Well, one is. Done.
Samsung does this with all of their stuff. Their Icon X earbuds are really great workout earbuds that only work with Samsung phones.
It doesn't hurt that Samsung has basically a 30% market share for the entire smartphone world
and
over 50% in Android.
But how much money do you make from that accessory to sell it to that many more people, though? I mean, like, from a business standpoint, I don't get it. No one's gonna switch to Samsung just to get this accessory.
Exactly.
At least I don't think.
The argument is that people are using Samsung anyway, so it doesn't matter. And that if Samsung can use proprietary libraries or whatever it can build to make it work better with Samsung products, you know, sort of like the Gear S line, the Gear S2 and S3 work with every Android phone and iPhone, but it works better with a Samsung phone.
Well, I'm fine with that. I'm fine with, you know, so like the, and that happened the same with the Gear 360. The Gear 360 only does live streaming on the Android phone. If you connect it to an iPhone, then live streaming and 360 to Facebook isn't a feature that's there. And so like that, for example, I would be fine with if you know, the other Android versions you know, didn't have every feature that was available on the Samsung phones. I think that that's a fair gambit because, like you said, you know, Samsung has proprietary frameworks that they use. And while I personally don't agree with that, I understand it and I can get behind that. But to not have it at all, it just seems like there's an entire group of people that you're looking at and saying, nah, I really don't want your money.
Yeah. I mean, again, Samsung's the one thing Samsung hasn't been able to do the way that Apple has done really well is ecosystem lock-in. So this is something the company's not going to give up on. I think I agree with you. It's not great from a consumer perspective, but this is Samsung. This is a company that is relentless about trying to leverage any software advantage to sell more hardware, because hardware in the Android ecosystem is commoditized like crazy. And
it's true.
One way to do it is to get people to buy your stupid earbuds or buy your stupid 360 degree cameras. And they're, you know what I'm saying? They're not stupid, but it is what it is. This is Samsung trying to eke out as much lock-in as possible.
Yeah, if you're a Samsung fan, you're not allowed to say the words walled garden or complain about iTunes or any of that crap anymore. Period.
Full stop. So we're getting a bit off track. I wanted to talk a little bit about a couple other announcements from the Motorola camp this week. Won't spend as long on it because these are the 8th, 9th, and 10th products that Motorola has announced this summer or this year.
Wow.
First was the Moto E4 Plus, which was already announced earlier in the summer, but is now officially coming to the U.S. It's $159, I believe, for a 2 gigabyte RAM, 16 gigabyte storage version, and it's got a 5.5-inch 720p display and a crazy 5,000 milliamp hour battery. So. Yeah. Jerry, even though this is running a Snapdragon 427, which was built on a 28 nanometer process, which we all know is not nearly as efficient as the modern 14 nanometer and 10 nanometer processes, this is still going to last a long time, right?
No doubt. I can't verify that it's USB-C.
No, it's USB. It's micro USB. I have one.
Okay. Oh, well, see, then I should have asked you. There goes my idea of buying it as a battery pack. You know, that's amazing. And give it maybe a month or two and then look for places like Boost Mobile or other really, really super budget carriers to allow you to use it or even offer selling it themselves. And, you know, if you didn't have money for a smartphone and a plan before, well, maybe you do now.
Yeah.
This is the phone you buy your 13-year-old who's really actively playing Pokemon Go still.
Right, right.
Oh, that's a great idea. Yeah, so this phone is something of an anomaly for Motorola. It's extremely similar looking to other devices released in the range from the Moto G5 and G5 Plus to the Moto E4 to the Moto C. They all have that recognizable round...
Yeah.
Fingerprint or that recognizable round camera and the front fingerprint sensor with the rounded corners. But this thing is much thicker and it's very, very big. I mean, it's not fun to use, but I've been playing with it for the last couple of days. No issues with performance and I haven't been able to kill it. It's been, although there's no SIM in it, so it's not really being used like a phone yet, but this thing just, the standby time is insane. So I look forward to seeing what it can do when I actually use it as a phone. But Jerry, I'm just wondering, what does this say about Motorola's strategy? Because this is the 10th... Sorry, I didn't even talk about the other two phones. There were the Moto G5S and Moto G5S Plus. S stands for Special Edition. Those are better versions of the Moto G5 series that was announced earlier at MWC. So now my question... Why? What is the deal? Why is Motorola releasing at least 10 phones this year?
I think a big part of it is to see what sticks. You know, if they release 10 phones this year they know which six phones to release next year. I'm not saying that's what they're going to do, because we have to put Lenovo into the mix, and they sell like 316 different models of ThinkPad. So I think that's part of it, but it's also a strategy of, all right, we're reinventing the Motorola brand. Let's see what we need to do. Every company that makes phones understands that right now Samsung owns the top end. It doesn't mean they shouldn't make a phone that's good and expensive, but that's not going to be, you know, that's not going to sell in volume. It's, you know, can we sell something down the middle that, you know, isn't expensive, but it's not exactly cheap? Or should we stick to, you know, the really budget model lines? There's room to find out if you're a company like Lenovo who can afford to try it.
So what's really interesting about the new Moto G5S and G5S Plus is they're slightly bigger in terms of screen size. The Plus is 5.5 inches rather than the G5 Plus, which is 5.2. The G5S is 5.2, whereas the G5 is 5 inches. It's so confusing. But the emphasis is mainly on the camera improvements, especially on the Plus line. This is the cheapest Motorola phone to get a dual camera, and it goes up against companies like ZTE and Honor that are putting dual cameras in their budget phones to great success. People think, oh, two cameras have to be twice as good as one, as we learned with the Moto Z2 Force. That's definitely not true. But you can do some cool things with two cameras. In this particular situation, there's a black and white and a color sensor, and you can use the black and white sensor to improve low light performance. You can use both of them together to add depth to your photos. You can remove backgrounds because you have two distinct, you know, a front and a rear subject. All of these things are great, but what the hell? How are they going to differentiate between these G5 models, Russell? It sounds like I'm having trouble keeping up with it, and I do it for a living.
Yeah, but I think that's the thing, is that, you know, if they're not sold in the same places at the same time, then the people who are going to be buying them kind of don't care, right? I mean, like, if one is sold at, you know, Best Buy and Boost Mobile and Target, and the others are sold at Walmart and you know, I don't know, maybe Sprint or T-Mobile, then it doesn't really matter.
That's right. What Nokia did with their budget Windows phones, and those sold pretty good for, you know, for a Windows phone.
So what you're saying, I mean, we know a lot about where these phones are going to be sold, mainly not in the U.S. Only the G5S Plus is coming to the U.S. later this fall. But the press release emphasized Euro and Europe, which is probably a better market for this. People buy their phones outright there. There's very little in terms of financing. So you're putting all the money up front rather than having to, or allowing people to buy a phone with no money down like you do in the US. In that sense, these phones almost become the new mid-range. You have the G5S for €249 and then the G5S Plus for €299, which is a nice chunk of change, but you do get a lot of what you would get on the higher end Motorola phones. You get a full metal aluminum body. You get the aforementioned dual camera setup. On the G5S Plus, you get a Snapdragon 625 and 4 gigs of RAM, 64 gigs of storage, 3000 milliamp hour battery. I mean, this is very much a very well spec mid-range device. And you're right, Russell. I think this could definitely stand in for the Moto Z line in many parts of the world.
And I hate to always circle back to Samsung, but that's something Samsung's not exploring. Samsung makes a lot of phones, and they make a lot of decent mid-range phones, but none that are, you know, built like a nicer GS8.
Yeah.
Well, but I mean, the GS8 unlocked is, what's it, like $525 now? Is it still a similar price in the UK?
Yeah, I don't know what the price is in the UK, but I'm not sure if they're giving away if they're discounting it as readily as they are here.
See, I'm trying to find a reason to make sense of all this, Russell, and you just keep trampling every thought I have.
I mean, the biggest thing, you know, that Daniel brought up there, and I love how patient he was with my complete ignorance of European market in general when I said what I said earlier. But the whole, you know, the big thing in the UK for the last couple of years, having, you know, talked to Alex about it a bunch, has been the way that Honor is kind of taken over there. You know, when they release phones, you know, it's kind of a, you know, they kind of own the mid range over there, as far as I'm aware. I could be mistaken, but this could be an attempt to kind of squeeze in on that over there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's something to be said for how Honor is just inundating the European market with high quality metal phones that don't have a great software experience. So when Motorola can come in and be like, well, we're gonna match you on the hardware side, and we're not gonna give you guff about, you know, EMUI 5.1, which makes everything look weird, even though it's a lot better than the old version, it's still, I think, Motorola's software advantage is what is gonna make people is gonna largely impress people.
Lot to be explored there. I mean, yeah.
I mean, I'm looking forward to trying the Moto G5 S Plus, because that could be a daily driver for me. You know, if the battery's good enough, that could certainly be a daily driver. So and then there's the other rumor of Motorola's next phone, which is the Moto X4. So, you know, we've seen leaked renders of that phone. We saw a presentation earlier this year where the Moto X4 was right under the Z line, but above the G line in terms of price. So again, Motorola is not finished releasing devices for this year. Lots to come. Moving along, we had a bit more information about the Note 8 and the LG V30. The Note 8 specs were released this morning by Evan Blass, EV Leaks. So this is coming together. We now know what the phone looks like. It's basically a boxier Galaxy S8, and we know the specs. It's going to have a Snapdragon 835 or Exynos 8895, depending on the region, up to 6 gigs of RAM rather than 4, 64 gigs base storage. But Russell, the cool thing about this is that we get the first dual stabilized camera system. So we're seeing two 12 megapixel sensors. The first is f1.7, which is stabilized, and it's going to be a wide sensor. And the next is a 2x, so a twice distance focal length 12 megapixel sensor at an f2.4, but this one is optically stabilized. So this is something Alex has been clamoring for, and I think it's finally coming. How important is this?
Does it mean that I can run down the street and take a picture of something crazy that's happening, and while I'm running, it'll still take the picture and not shake things up?
Pretty much,
it won't be a super blurry photo. And I'm really on board for that, because, you know, that's not a thing that ever happens in my life, but I'd like to know that I could take advantage of it if it does. I think that, you know, this is kind of the inevitable step forward as we move into, you know, dual sensors and different features existing within, you know, the individual sensors that are going to be there. I think that these are not sensors, dual lenses. It's still the same sensor, right? So it's complicated to stabilize them both with hardware and not just use electronic stabilization, you know, because there's pretty limited space there. But the Note, you know, that's kind of the advantage of the Note line, is that it's slightly bigger and there's a little tiny bit more room to play around in there. So it's good to see them taking that step.
I'm going to have to disagree there. This is maybe disagree. I understand why Samsung did this. This will probably be the best dual camera, you know, as far as you're shaky when you take a picture, it still might look good of all of them. But it's a step backward, adding more movable parts. The future is exploring more software stabilization. We're not there yet. We're close. We're not there yet. So adding the parts to, you know, mechanically stabilize a lens is probably a good idea for a Note. I don't you know, necessarily want to see this trickle down. I want to see Samsung doing what they do best and just trying something and giving us crazy optical, you know, stabilization from the software side.
You know what I'm really looking forward to about this phone?
Tell me.
Is all of the really terrible bomb jokes.
Yeah.
Because we have 3 months of that at least in our future, and I'm just going to put it out there. Really looking forward to it. Definitely not going to groan and roll my eyes 100 times a day. That's not going to happen.
I think the people at Samsung are looking forward to it too, because they can sit back and know that this is the safest phone ever built and ever sold. I promise you that.
You will be able to hurl this phone through human beings and the phone will still be fine.
And you could take a picture that's nice and sharp.
That's right.
While you're doing it.
This is the sound of Daniel immediately regretting having us both on this podcast at the same time.
Never. I just love listening to you banter. So this looks like a Note and it looks like a Galaxy S8. Samsung clearly has found a way to bridge those two gaps, which I appreciate. Slightly bigger than the Galaxy S8 Plus, not unexpected. Slightly smaller battery, as Jerry noted. 3,300 milliamp hours is the rumored size. Smaller, but safer. So let's kind of understand why Samsung's doing that.
I really hope that Samsung didn't give up on this weird two-piece case thing that they did for the S8.
Your favorite.
I'm still using it. I still love it.
You're such a weirdo.
I will buy it immediately for the Note 8.
I think that was more for the fun Galaxy S8. And this is not... You know, the Note's always been aimed at a more business-like person.
I can be very business-like.
I think that case was a bar bet. I dare you to make it. See if somebody will buy it. And then here comes Russell.
Apparently the thing that everyone's excited about is the Alcantara case that's so hard to get a hold of.
Which is so weird because it's all over Canada. I don't know. Is Alcantara more legal here?
No, because Microsoft puts Alcantara on freaking everything here. The best thing about going to the Microsoft campus earlier this year was they just had giant rolls of it. And they were like, look at all of this Alcantara we have. Like, you could have. Like, they had a whole room of it. So, no, definitely not illegal here.
Buy a couple hundred of those cases and ship them to me, and I will split the profits.
That's a good idea. Side hustle.
Let's do it,
Jerry.
It's a good thing no one's listening.
This is Samsung's latest and greatest. It's going to launch August 23rd. But we also know, thanks to another leak from this morning,
drip, drip, drip,
the LG V30 is going to look very similar to the S8 Plus. It's going to be less curvy, but from the render, it kind of looks like there's a little bit of a curve. And LG officially came out yesterday with a statement saying that the V30 will, even though it didn't use the name, is going to have a plastic OLED display, the first LG phone with such display technology. Jerry, what does this mean, and is it better than Samsung's Super AMOLED?
Well, no, nothing's going to be better than Samsung's Super AMOLED. You know, next year LG may pull that off, but no, not this year, I'm sorry. But seeing LG building a 6-inch OLED display in enough numbers, and, you know, they're pretty confident they're going to sell, you know, maybe not a billion of these things, but they're going to sell a lot of them. So they're able to build a 6-inch display. 6 inches is fairly big. And it's OLED, and they've got the quantity down. That's a good thing, because OLED is the way everything needs to move. And Samsung needs some competition.
That's true.
Also, doesn't using plastic OLED make it more durable?
Isn't that like the idea that you put inside the display and it flexes a bit more without breaking?
Yeah, I think that the biggest, and don't quote me on this, the biggest thing is if you like smash the glass, there's a better chance the display and digitizer itself won't be damaged, and you just got you know, we've all seen people on the bus with an iPhone with a broken screen, and they're still trying to use it, and they've got those spots where it's black. You know, I think the plastic layer helps prevent that.
I'm always amazed at how many people on the bus are using broken phones. It's so
everywhere.
Astonishing how many people live with a broken screen. This is, you know, Jerry, if we want to do a side hustle, we should figure out a way to make it easier for people to fix their phones, because it's crazy. And it's not even safe. A lot of the time there are tiny little shards of glass.
I've cut myself on a broken phone screen because I was that dumb guy on the bus once or twice.
What's popped up here over, especially like in the last 6 months, in all of the malls around here are now like kiosks in the middle of the walkway where there's just some guy behind, not even like a desk, but like a little podium with a little monitor with like a video showing how he can fix your phone in like an hour if you've got it broken.
I forgot you and I shop at the same malls. That's why I'm like, yeah, I've seen that too.
This guy's got this. He's got like a podium and like an iFixit toolkit and a little heat gun. And he doesn't have more than 4 feet of space, you know, in this tiny walkway. And at any time, somebody could come and bump this guy's shoulder or just kind of reach in and scramble whatever it is he's working on. And this guy, you know, I don't think he gets paid more than, you know, $10 an hour to sit in the middle of this mall with so much noise everywhere and repair these phones. And I feel so bad for him because it's not like it's super hard. But all of those distractions and the potential for something to go wrong while the customer is just kind of staring you down, getting you to repair these phones, that is the closest thing to my nightmare that you could possibly imagine.
You really do have to have nerves of steel.
Yeah.
But also, no doubt with some of these phones, I tried to take a Galaxy S7 Edge apart. Man, it's like 99% glue in there. That's
Wait,
tough.
You're not the guy, but you're not the Jerry at Jerry Rig Everything?
No, he's a much better looking and slightly less reckless Jerry than
I am. No, he's not actually Jerry. His name is Zach.
I know.
But he's a good guy. He started this whole BlackBerry Key One screen display dismemberment thing that forced TCL to update the way that it manufactures BlackBerries. The Key Ones, rather. And in my opinion, that is the best thing that he could have done.
If it was needed, yes.
It was needed. But he's not doing it to be malicious. He's not unbox therapying it where he's buying an iPhone and trying to break it to get 1.5 million views. I mean, he does do that. He gets 1.5 million views, but he shows you how to put phones back together. And I like that. I think that he's doing people a service. He's kind of like iFixit. I mean, there's the, you know, you mentioned iFixit. That site is not just a place to look at broken phones.
Yes. But I mean, Kevin is not the only one with a Key One that just doesn't exhibit that behavior. Mine doesn't either. So, you know, it's good that they looked at their manufacturing process, and it's quite possible they didn't change a doggone thing. They just, okay, let's reject more than we did before and make most of them be good, which is great. But if they actually spent money and changed something, I hope they needed to.
Interesting. So back to the V30, and I just want to close on this because what's interesting about this phone is that it looks like the G6, which means that it looks like what most phones are going to look like in 2018 and later in 2017. The Huawei Mate 10 is expected to look like this, you know, 18:9 or 18 or 19:9, whatever aspect ratio. Russell, is LG kind of losing something by pivoting away from the V series rather divisive and garish design, the boxiness, the dual screen, the kind of, I'm not going to say masculine, but kind of off-putting nature of the phone? What do you think?
I don't think they're losing a single damn thing by moving away from dual displays, because that was just dumb. But the rest of it, yeah, there are people who appreciated that the V line had a little more heft, That rubber backing, while I found the phone a little too wide to hold and really enjoy compared to some of the other phones, the grip that you get with the back of the kind of rubbery back of, especially the V10, I think they shirked away with it a little bit with the V20, but the V10 was really just kind of grippy and solid, and you really kind of felt like you could use it to drive a nail into a board. I think they tried it for two generations and there weren't enough people who said, yes, this is exactly what I need in a phone. So they're moving on. I don't know that it's a mistake, but there will definitely be people who lament it not being there.
And one thing that the V series always emphasizes is media creation. So you can shoot great photos, you can shoot great video, and you can edit it right on the device itself. Really high quality digital to audio converters. And last year, the V20 shipped with one of the highest quality DACs on any phone ever, right, Jerry? It was basically the best you can get unless you're spending like $1,000 on a headphone amplifier.
It was if you bought specialized equipment and didn't spend $1,000, that's what you were going to get, and it came built into the phone.
And a lot of people don't know this, but every V20 also shipped with a signed headshot from Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
And a pre-broken camera.
That's why I bought the phone, because I just love Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Yeah, whoever that guy is. Yeah,
Joseph Gordon-Levitt. So basically, he's back, by the way. That campaign is coming back. He teased it on Twitter the other day.
Oh, is he doing the V30 stuff too? Awesome.
He's doing it, the Hit Record. So his Joseph Gordon-Levitt has a fantastic company called Hit Record, and it crowdsources content, basically video, drawings, audio, everything, and they create movies essentially, and sometimes commercials, using these disparate clips, and they are amazing. If you've never gone to hitrecord.com, go. It's really astonishing how good some of these pieces are.
And the commercials, like I tease, because I saw those commercials freaking everywhere last year. They were on like every website that I went to for at least two solid months, but they were good, and they went like, they didn't lean too hard on like being funny or anything. Like they were informative. I knew a lot about the V20 at the end of the commercial, as far as its ability to do exactly what LG wants the V20 to be about, which is, like you said, media creation and consumption. So yeah, I'm genuinely excited about seeing him come back and do that. I'm less excited about seeing that same commercial for until the end of time.
To be fair, though, that's LG's fault, not Jordan Gordon Love It.
I love fault. It. The,
love it.
The name of this podcast is
G Gordon
to be...
Liddy.
Okay, so that phone's going to be debuting at IFA August 31st. Stay tuned for that. Let's move on. Let's talk about things that are currently available and probably in Russell's hand.
Oh, yes.
Question mark? I'm talking about the Asus Zenfone AR. This is a phone that you went to New York for earlier in the week. Tell us about this phone, because it was announced 7 months ago.
Oh, man. Yeah, so we all first saw this in January. But when we saw it in January, we all just kind of laughed afterwards, because none of the stuff that made the phone special worked. They were like, yeah, sure, take a look at this phone. By the way, none of the Tango stuff works. Daydream will start, but you can't really run any Daydream apps on it yet. And, like, stay away from the camera. So that was weird. And Daniel, I know that you and Flo and Andrew and Alex and Jerry got a little better look at some of the Tango features on this phone at Google I.O.
Yes, that was fun.
A bunch of decent features there. So finally, Asus and Google are ready to kind of put all of these disparate pieces that we've seen over the last 7 months together. And it's an Asus Zenfone, which, you know, to me, they're not very visually appealing. I don't like the physical home button on the bottom with the capacitive buttons on the left and right. But there's a big friendly screen here. It's not as heavy as some of the other big Zenfone models. And it's got a Tango phone. It's the first phone that combines Tango and Daydream. And as far as I'm aware, at least for a little while, the only phone that combines Tango and Daydream. I think the only thing we're going to get that's even close is if Motorola actually releases a Tango mod, which they said they were looking at doing. But it's
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
So did everybody, yeah. I think, but Russell.
And that's not fair. I think we are actually getting one more Tango phone by the end of the year. So. I can't remember who's doing it.
Before we move on, before we go into the phone itself, I just want to remind people the differences between Daydream and Tango and maybe why we haven't seen it, both of them on the same phone up until now.
Oh, yeah. So both of these have a separate set of non-trivial hardware requirements. You know, Daydream is very, very visual. You're putting the phone in a virtual reality headset and you're strapping it to your face. And because you're doing that, Google created this kind of separation line between Cardboard and Daydream, where Cardboard was this thing that you could enjoy virtual reality for a minute or two and then you're kind of done or you pass it off to another person. Whereas Daydream was designed to be virtual reality that you could experience for, you know, 30 minutes or an hour, or you could watch an entire movie inside of the headset if you really wanted to. And so there was a set of hardware requirements to make sure that experience was the same across all of these different phones. It didn't make you nauseous. It didn't, you know, make your eyes hurt because the screen maybe wasn't tuned quite right, or the refresh rate was lower than it should have been. And so, you had to have an OLED display. It had to be, you know, tuned a certain way to Google's needs. And it had to have a certain, you know, quality of accelerometer inside in order to make sure that when you move around, you're not seeing any, you know, blurs or anything like that. And so, you know, Daydream had this kind of hard list of requirements, and that's why not every Android phone runs Daydream. Tango is an augmented reality platform that is very different from anything else that you hear with the words augmented reality attached to it, in that it's not just, you know, when most people think about augmented reality, it's putting a virtual thing in front of your camera on the screen. So like you look and there's a little, you know, cartoon banana dancing on your desk that you can see through your phone. And that's cool. And that is technically augmented reality. But what Asus and the other partners have done with Tango is, you know, Tango is spatially aware. So when it uses a special camera array on the back of the phone to kind of, analyze all of the different things around you and know that, you know, that there's a wall over there, there's a floor over there, there's a ceiling over there. And when you walk around in a room with this camera array, it maps the room and knows where the phone is in relation to all of these other things in the room, which is really important for apps that want to encourage you to walk around. You know, so the first example they ever gave was a museum tour, and it was just insane that the phone knew where it was and knew where you needed to be to walk upstairs and to walk around corners, and it guided you with these arrows. It was really unique.
So today on a Tango phone, we have the Lenovo Fab 2 Pro. We have the Zenfone AR. Are there any other Tango phones right now?
Not yet, no.
No, okay. So what can you currently do that's really neat with one of those two phones?
So I'm going to tell you one kind of silly fun thing and one really, really super nerdy thing. The first is Crayola made this app for Asus where these zombies come at you from every direction, and you have like the Crayola paint kit down at the bottom. And in order to stop the zombies from coming at you, you have to paint them in different colors by like shooting paint blobs at you.
Very
and
cool.
You're moving all around your room. Like you're really kind of super active. And, you know, so like I said, it starts out by kind of mapping your entire space. And so you're walking around looking at your phone, and the zombies come at you from every direction. And you when you paint them, they look down and they're excited that they're in color and they kind of wander off. So that it's a cute, fun way to kind of show off what's going on. The super nerdy thing, I use this for like an hour when the Lenovo Tango phone first came out. It's a Wi-Fi mapper that also maps your entire house. So I walk around with the phone and let the Tango camera see all of the nooks and crannies in my house, all of the corners and all of the, you know, all of the dark spaces. And when it's done, it shows me a three-dimensional, you know, map of my house and shows me where the Wi-Fi strength in my house is the strongest and weakest.
That is so cool.
And because it has a complete map of my house, you know, it says, you know, that this thing over here, you know, on the other side of the refrigerator, your Wi-Fi is really weak over here. And so I can just see you know, entire rooms and my entire house, including multiple floors, and know, you know, where the Wi-Fi is strongest and weakest, and I can act on that. And that was an incredibly empowering tool to have for a nerd like me who is trying to set up, you know, a way so that everyone in the house has the same, you know, or relatively similar Wi-Fi strength. That there are no other ways that I can think of to do that in the way that was as even close to as convenient as what I could do with this Tango phone.
Okay, so I'm going to bring up something that is going to be of importance to people when Tango proliferates: privacy. This is something that obviously, like any foot camera, stores information. It can take a photo of your floor. It can take a photo of your wall, but there's very little context there. At some point, the visual is going to combine with the data, the mapping data, and it's going to have a lot of information about people's homes, more so than ever before. Is this a security risk, and has Google addressed this when it comes to the Tango platform or ecosystem?
So one of the first things that you see when you go into the kind of it's not a separate app store. All of the apps still live in Google Play, but it's a separate interface, kind of like how Daydream has a separate interface for kind of looking at just Daydream apps. The first thing that you see when you go into that is some privacy information that kind of explains how all that stuff goes. The first thing is all of the apps have all of the same permission frameworks as any other Android app. In that if there's certain kinds of data you don't want that app in particular to collect, you can just say, you know, no, you don't have access to that thing. And in most cases, it doesn't actually take away from a lot of the Tango features. Like there are apps where I have turned off the ability to take pictures, but because the Tango scanning thing is using infrared to create kind of temporary environments, then it's not really taking away from that while I'm using it. The only real difference that you'll find with a lot of things there is, the more ability you give for one of these apps to save things, the better you have features like when I leave a room with this phone and then come back later, all of that stuff is still in place because the phone remembers where those things were placed because it can recognize the room more or less. I use the word recognize, but there is actually a technical term for it. But the biggest thing there is that it follows the same Google privacy policy that every other app in the Google Play Store follows. In that, you know, the data that can be anonymized is anonymized. You can see it in your Google profile for the information that gets captured. And to the best of my knowledge, with all of the apps that I've seen so far, none of the apps that I've installed so far do things like audio recording or actual video recording. And the photos that are captured, you have access to and can remove when you're done with the thing that you have.
So
there'll be a privacy scare. There will be. Some developer is going to do something wrong and store, you know, maybe a picture of your living room or, heaven forbid, your bedroom.
A flawless poly map of my underwear drawer.
Yeah, and he's going to store it on a server somewhere remotely, and people are going to get up in arms, rightfully so, and then it'll be fixed. But I mean, you're not using these Tango apps by accident, so.
No, but there is a reasonable expectation of privacy when you use any app, and it may, right. you are entirely right that it's possible that we'll encounter a situation in the not so distant future where Google's existing privacy policy is just deemed insufficient, and I can't think of a situation where that would be true right now. But that certainly doesn't mean that it's not going to happen. And I hope that someone at Google is constantly thinking about that.
So, Russell, you published a piece called Where Does Asus and Tango Fit Into the Augmented Reality World? And in it, you mentioned the differences between Tango, which is Google's augmented reality platform, and the upcoming AR kit. I wouldn't call it a platform yet, but APIs and integration from Apple that's going to debut with iOS 11. The company previewed it at its WWDC conference in June, and developers have been publicly playing with it, trying to add very like cool features. But you say that AR Kit is limited, and as a result of its limitation, is never going to be as technically proficient or isn't right now as technically proficient as Tango. But because it's limited, it also allows within that limitation for a little bit more fun. Can you explain that?
Sure. I mean, it's an objective fact that ARKit connected to an iPhone, even whatever camera array Apple decides to put in the iPhone 8, is not going to be as capable as the Google Tango array. You know, the Google Tango array is not just it's measuring depth, but it's also saving that depth, and it's mapping entire physical spaces for it to remember and to interact within, where ARKit is very purpose-built for picking a thing, picking a spot, and building a virtual environment for you to see on that spot. You know, the demonstrations that we saw on stage, at WWDC were very cool, where, you know, this perfectly lit table, Kevin Federighi was able to kind of move around this coffee cup, and there was dynamic lighting from the other things that were put on the table, and all of that is very, very cool. But the second you walk away from that table, all of that stuff goes away. And if you walk back to that table, none of that stuff remembers where it's supposed to be. And that's an important distinction for augmented reality. You know, the thing that we've seen so far with all of these really cool videos on YouTube, and I don't mean to slight Apple in any way. Developers have done some awesome looking stuff with the limited amount of time that they've had so far. They're very kind of static. You know, you're looking at what's basically a video overlay with one or two things that you can engage in by tapping on the screen. And that's really it. You know, you're not able to, like, the most impressive thing that I saw was a man walking down the street with an augmented reality soldier kind of walking next to him. But what you don't see in that video is that the second that guy turns around, the app has no idea what to do next, because it doesn't know anything other than, you know, put a soldier 3 feet in front of me and make it walk. So while it's very cool, and I think we're going to see some really neat stuff out of it, my immediate concern when it comes to what Apple is enabling people to do with ARKit is that it's not going to stick. You know, I think people are going to see just this explosion of apps in the App Store the first couple months that you know the store is available for people to do ARKit things, but it's going to kind of be a flash in the pan for a lot of this stuff, like 98% of this stuff. And out of that, we'll probably see one or two really useful things in very specific situations that may end up carrying. That's weird in comparison to, you know, kind of thumbing through the Tango store that, you know, in Google's benefit has been very carefully cultivated over the last 2 years by developers who have had no audience and have been, you know, kind of purpose building things. These applications that Tango has access to right now, they are deeply interactive. They are very immersive, and they're built on the knowledge that, you know, the camera array is just able to see and give more information and more accurate information to kind of manipulate the environment on the other side of the screen.
I have a real problem with Google here, and Russell knows, because he and I have discussed this a little bit the past couple of days. Google I.O. last year, not even this year, every developer should have walked out with a device that they could use to build Tango apps, and Google should have made all 6,000 people in attendance pumped to build Tango apps, and they didn't.
I mean, I'll take that one step further, Jerry. It is insane to me, seeing what I've seen just in the couple of hours that I've had this phone versus the Lenovo phone, and seeing how far Google has grown since the Lenovo Tango phone in the last year and a half.
I'm sure.
It's crazy to me that the next Pixel is not going to have a Tango sensor built in.
And beyond that, there is, I don't want to say there's no developer excitement, because I don't want to slight the guys who are doing great things. I mean, they're doing great things that are fun, that are productive, and they're doing great things for accessibility with Tango. It is a wonderful platform, but there is just not the excitement that Apple generated with ARKit.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
and Tango is so superior.
The 10,000 people who are going to buy the Zenfone AR are going to be super excited by the stuff you can do with it. The the you know, couple hundred million people in the that are going to have access to augmented reality when Apple flips that switch is, you know, way, way more. And people are going to be more motivated. Developers are going to be more motivated to do kind of fun, silly things that you know, they cooked up over a weekend and they're able to sell for a dollar and make, you know, $500,000 over that weekend before yeah. people forget about it. And so, you know, on the one hand, it may not matter that that there are just more, you know, significantly more immersive and more technically capable apps in the Tango store, because, you know, as long as there are developers who are able to do that, you know, to whip something up over a weekend and make, you know, a couple hundred thousand dollars off of the people who saw a really cool video on YouTube. You know, that might just be what people think augmented reality is for the next couple of years, because that's where, you know, that's where eyeballs are. And that's a non-trivial thing.
The flip side is, like you said, if the next Pixel had the hardware, those apps could be in Google Play too. And then the Galaxy S9 would have the hardware. And it's a vicious circle.
You know, I've seen several commenters so far, just from the little bit that I've been teasing on Twitter, frustrated that Google didn't take an approach that is similar to the one that Apple is taking when it comes to augmented reality. And, you know, you make it very simple and you make it something that is easy to access. Mm. And that's something that, you know, that Google could very well do, given a lot of the knowledge that they've earned, especially with Daydream over the last little while.
Yeah.
But, you know, It's hard to see what the Zenfone AR is capable of compared to... I have 13 different demos on my iPad Pro, the 10.9 that was built for developing stuff for mm-hmm. ARKit, and they're damn cool. You know, to see the drone ship, you know, land a rocket, you know, in my backyard, or, you know, it's a very cool thing to see. The first two times that I saw it, and then I never turn it back on unless I go to show, you know, someone else. And that I think is going to be what happens to the app store, is we're going to see, you know, 1,000 apps within the first month that do stuff with ARKit that people are going to use twice and then never use again. But that might not matter if people are making and spending money.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. People didn't realize they were using augmented reality when they opened Pokemon Go every 10
right.
seconds
oh, yeah.
for the last
Absolutely.
Year. And this is just a way for people to make better, more sticky Pokemon. I mean, there's nothing more sticky than Pokemon Go, but to make their own versions of Pokemon Go and allow companies like Niantic to take advantage of, with the current hardware, the APIs that Apple is allowing them to use. So from my perspective, if it makes Pokemon Go stickier and less crappy, if the Pokemon don't get stuck every time you move around because Apple created a bunch of really great ARKit APIs, that sounds like a good proposition to me. The issue with Tango is that it's siloed, right? It's basically siloed to the experience on two phones. And Google has not said we are going to expand our augmented reality vision beyond these two devices right now. And you're right. If the Pixel, even if it was just the Pixel, because the Pixel sold rumored to sell 4 to 5 million units, even if it was just on the Pixel, that would be a much bigger base of devices.
Yeah, I mean, you're definitely not wrong that, you know, it's going to create a bunch of these small Pokemon Go style experiences that are going to make people very happy. You know, that's not nothing. And Jerry's right in that it's deeply frustrating to know that, you know, that with a little bit of work, there could be something much better, you know, available to a lot of people. But, you know, this is not a one-stop thing for Apple. Apple is going to keep pushing this. You know, what we've got is this very basic thing this year, and next year it's going to be even more advanced. And we saw, I genuinely think one of the coolest things that Apple did last year was, while people had phones in their hands, you know, used the new dual camera system that they had to figure out portrait mode. You know, portrait mode was not an out-of-the-box feature for the iPhone 7. It was something that got built over time as Apple figured out how depth stuff, you know, was working with these two lenses in order to make that work. And that depth tracking is really valuable for augmented reality stuff.
Yep.
You know, so they've had a lot more time now to do that. I'm eager to see what happens when they turn around and say, hey, so we've got this new dual camera setup. And it's got even more depth information, and that's gonna make things even better. Not just now, but in a year from now, when we've continued to plug away at this. So I criticize ARKit for being very simple now. It is definitely not going to stay that way, especially with the volume of users it looks like it's going to have. I'm more excited about ARKit in a year from now, and unfortunately, in a year from now, roughly the same number of people are going to know what Tango is.
That's just sad, but it will help the idea of augmented reality go mainstream, and I think that's a good thing.
Russell, has Google given up on the idea of a commercial Tango platform for... the example I saw was there was an app I installed on my phone that was built with Tango devices that mapped out a mall and showed me where wheelchair accessibility was and where it wasn't. That they were a big push for like commercial applications in use. I haven't heard much about that lately.
That kind of takes me to an interesting conversation that I had earlier this week with the head of R&D for Wayfair. You know, because mm-hmm. I kind of giggle when they're like, hey, we let you put furniture in your home because they're not even remotely the first company to do that. But
right.
I sat down with him for a little while, and he had a really fascinating perspective on what he would like to see Tango get used for. You know, and it was a lot of what you're talking about there is, you know, kind of being the person who can kind of create maps or to scan something into virtual reality just by walking around it and letting the, mm-hmm. the Tango sensor kind of capture things. And that seemed to be the direction that he felt, you know, Tango would go over the next year, you know, as far as a commercial use went. And that I thought was interesting, you know, was that there are definitely, maybe not Google directly, but there are definitely developers... you know, looking at the commercial aspect of this as something, you know, kind of deeply promising for them.
Great.
Interesting. So we're going to take a quick break. And before we come back to end the show, I want to talk about our sponsor, Thrifter. And, you know, we've talked about Thrifter every week for the last month or so. But I think what we're going to do now is talk about a couple deals on Thrifter that we like, because this is a place, as I say every week, that you can't really, there aren't a lot of places on the internet that brings all these awesome deals together. So we know one thing that I would like to buy, and that is some really cool looking, they look like three glasses, Jerry, but they're not really. So we know that this is that there's a solar eclipse coming, a total eclipse it's the first in a very long time, coming August 21st. And you can't look at an eclipse, even though it's dark, straight on. You have to wear some sort of eye protection.
Can't stop.
And B&H Video, Photo Video, is selling a 5-pack of eclipse viewing glasses for $5. That's $1 per glass, 5 people, $5. Jerry, why do you need these like weird 1950s looking 3D glasses like things to watch the eclipse?
You're still staring at the sun. You know, it may just be a halo and a corona with a tiny spot, but it's still the sun, and it goes through the lens of your eye, and that means the beam of light is amplified and it burns your retina.
That's crazy.
You know, it burns the back of your eyeball. So it's a real thing. And you know, a buck a pair is a great deal, especially, you know, I've got a decent sized family if I gather all the kids up. But, you know, make sure you get something to protect your eyes, even if it's the Pringles can and black cardboard, whatever. But it's a whole lot easier just to buy a 5-pack of pre-built glasses.
So, Russell, you had a good one also available on Thrifter. It's 4 months. If you buy 4 months of Hulu prepaid, you get a free Roku Express. Why is the Roku the thing that people want? I've heard of Roku. I like the idea of it, but is it better than like a Fire TV or even a Chromecast?
So I'm a hardcore Chromecast guy, just because I always have my phone on me. But the number one criticism that I have of the Chromecast from family members when I give Chromecast out as like Christmas presents and stuff is that it doesn't have a remote. And it makes me immediately wish that I had just bought these people a Roku, because that's basically it. It's a lightweight streaming box. It's very small, very simple. 1080p streaming box that has Netflix and Hulu and Amazon and basically everything, but it's run by a very simple battery powered remote instead of your phone. And they're often pretty inexpensive, but the thing is that the software on these, they're kind of hideous, but they're bulletproof. Like the software on the Roku is always really solid. The updates that come in are they're small and they're very simple, and they don't add a ton of features, but they're always really solid. And this deal is you're spending $30 to earn $30, because you're spending $32 basically to get Hulu for 4 months, and you're getting the $30 Roku Express for free.
That is a pretty good deal. And if you are interested in learning more about either of these deals, you can go to thrifter.com. And while you're there, sign up for their daily newsletter. You can get these two deals and all the other awesome deals in your inbox every morning. Okay, so before we go, we had an email from a guy named John. And John wants to know, he says, recently my parents selected the Pixel and Pixel XL to purchase as their new phones.
Yay, round
of applause. Parents have good reasons for using phone cases, and I recommended sticking with OtterBox based on reliability and availability. To my surprise, I got a call from my mom, who was being told by a salesperson that they don't recommend heavy-duty cases because they can trap heat and hurt the battery. John said that he pointed out that a broken phone on the ground is a much bigger issue than a bit of battery loss, which is true. So my parents went ahead and got cases. And he asks, I'm familiar with heat affecting the performance of a battery and or the system on a chip when sustained to an extreme, but what effect, if any, does using a case have on a modern phone? And I felt like this was a good question for either of you, because you're both geniuses. So who wants to take this one? Jerry, do you want to start? What's the deal
here?
Sure.
Well, there's... when used sustained at the extreme, that's something that John says at the end of his email. And yes, that is an issue. Extreme is a whole lot hotter than you can touch. And if there's a problem and your phone is reaching those kind of temperatures, that's going to quickly degrade and or damage your battery. But an OtterBox traps heat. It certainly does. But I think this is somebody who, a salesperson who meant well, but maybe was overthinking it. I would not be afraid to use an OtterBox on any phone. That's just, to me, it's too much fuss over the tiny amount of heat that's going to be trapped by a phone case, even an OtterBox.
Yeah, Russell, I mean, this is something that we've heard over the years from time to time, but phones are, most of them are made of metal, right? And metal tends to be a heat sink and disperses heat as the system on a chip and battery expel it. So, yeah, I mean, this sounds like a bit of an urban myth.
I mean, the closest thing that you're going to run into in a real life scenario is if you're the kind of person who lives somewhere where it's just real hot all the time, and you've got your phone sitting in one of those dashboard mounts, sitting in the sun. You're driving for a couple hours and it's in an OtterBox, so it's constantly running GPS and it's being baked by the sun and it's in an OtterBox. You might maybe have a problem with your battery at some point down the road if you did that a lot. But
And your phone would tell you,
right?
Too.
Yeah, you'd get an obvious overheat warning, and that that overheat warning does not immediately mean that you're going to have battery problems. It really has to be an extended, like, I saw this battery warning 9 times today. Then mm-hmm. Yeah, there might maybe be a problem in your future if that's you. But you know, otherwise, it would take some pretty extreme extended stuff for it to really affect your battery in a way that you noticed right away, or even in a relatively short period of time. And if your argument is, well, I had this one phone once, and at the end of 2.5 years, the battery didn't last me very long. I mean, congratulations, that's every phone ever. Like, battery degradation just happens. So, I mean, if your goal is avoiding it, you know, you are always going to have some. No, putting it in an OtterBox is not going to make it notably worse.
So there's also, you have this FLIR infrared camera that takes that measures heat. I think this is a good little test see whether a phone in a case is demonstrably more demonstrably hotter than one not in a case.
Russell, I think you need to give your daughter a Pixel XL in an OtterBox. Have it fast charging while she streams Netflix and or plays games, and you put the FLIR on it.
Is it
Let's
FLIR
try
or
to
FLIR?
Burn it up.
I always said FLIR, but it really could be FLIR. My pronunciation for things is often worse than yours.
And I'm Canadian, so I got some excuses. Yeah, that would be fun. I think we should do it. We'll post it on androidcentral.com. Or .ca.
Oh, it's happening. And I have one of those FLIR cameras. I like taking pictures of my toes with it.
Mm. When you're in your hammock, cozy.
I don't share them with people, though, because that's weird.
I didn't think you were going with toes.
I know.
There, and I was already laughing.
I was really hoping that I could get Dan to hold his breath for that one, but
I didn't want to say anything. All right, so I think we're good. We're going to end there. Thank you guys so much for joining us. Russell, where can people find you if they want to learn more about your work, yourself, your FLIR?
I am at Russell Holly at just about all things that are connected to the internet, and you can find me at androidcentral.com and vrheads.com and really all of the Mobile Nation sites except for Thrifter. I haven't written anything for Thrifter yet. I have to go talk to Dan.
Yeah, me too. It's time. And Jerry, where can people find you if they want to learn more?
Now that it's summertime, if you're traveling through West Virginia, I'll be on my porch. Mm. Just holler at me on Twitter at GBHIL, and you come out on the porch and share a beverage with me.
Very nice.
Actually, can we take just a second? I realize that we're at the end of the show. Jerry,
yes?
Do you have any? Do you still have that style ring on your BlackBerry?
Yeah.
Do you still regret it, or are you actually digging it now?
Oh my God, this was the dumbest thing, and I've done a lot of dumb things, but this is the dumbest thing I ever did.
Oh, I love it.
I want to peel it off, but then I'm afraid I'm going to have this big goopy mess on the back of my phone.
You can get that off. I've done it before.
But I just, don't do it. I'm sorry, Kevin, anybody else that loves him. But if you're listening, don't do it.
Mm. Fair. All right. Well, Jerry, GBHIL.
Yes.
Android Central.
I should change it to at StyleRing.
StyleRing.com. My name is Daniel Bader. You can find me at JourneyDan on Twitter, Instagram, all the things. You can find us all at AndroidCentral.com. And we will see you again next week. Thanks for listening.
Have fun.
Adios.